This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The title to this prayer treatment is Zero God, Day or Death, Which One to Choose? Let's not anticipate what those terms refer to until we do some research. The one thing we can depend on with truth is that it is multidimensional. We could be talking about the truth about something, and that would be relative. Or we could be talking about truth with a capital T, and that is absolute, referring to God. So we could either be talking about the source of all existence, which is God. We could refer to God as all, with a capital A. And we can be referring to God's manifestation as all, with a small a. And a small a is automatically talking in relative terms. Mary Baker Eddy was the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, as well as discovering the system of divine metaphysics. The system of divine metaphysics is her most advanced work, and she tells us about it on two different specific pages wherein she introduces it. On page 146 of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she states the following. The paragraph title is System of Divine Metaphysics. The text is as follows. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, under the title of 32 Planks of the Platform, is the following. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Following then, are 11 pages, pages 330 to 340 inclusive, wherein she gives us the 32 specific topics, referring to the 32 planks. As is a good idea when we're going to begin any serious study of the system of divine metaphysics, or Christian Science in general, anything in the textbook, or anything in any of her other writings. It's an excellent idea to read three short introductory quotes, which she places at the beginning of the textbook, right after the title pages. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. 2. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy. Whatever we do, in terms of study in any topic, whether it is Christian Science or whether it is something in our profession, it is dealing with any relationship, including our family, our individual family, or anything in the family of God. And the family of God includes everyone that exists, because there's only one God. Therefore, there's only one Father, one Mother. So all of the so-called male characteristics and all the so-called female characteristics are included in their entirety when we talk about God, or when we talk about God's manifestation, which is all existence, which is the ALL with a lowercase a, which comes from the source, which is ALL with a capital A, and that's God, the only source. So let's look at that first quote. What could Jesus mean when he says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free"? The word know, K-N-O-W, really refers to understand. In other words, we have torn it apart. We've looked at all of the elements. We get our highest understanding of them, and then we put it back together, knowing a whole lot more about it than we did before. If we know even a little bit about it, we will accomplish the goal set forth by Isaiah in chapter 43. He says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy refers to that in this way. First of all, she quoted that, copied that quote from Isaiah, and placed it as an introductory quote to chapter 14. Chapter 14 is an updated version of her earliest work, which was entitled Science of Man. And now we're using the 1910 final edition. And she wrote her first textbook in 1875. And this was prior to her first textbook. So this was revealed to her before she even had a book. And it was so pure that, except with some apparently minor updates, it was placed in the textbook as a summary of the first 13 chapters. This is chapter 14, which is entitled Recapitulation. And look how valuable the quote from Isaiah is when we realize that that's the introduction to the chapter that summarizes 13 chapters of the textbook. Wow! There's no words that can amplify the value of what this means. She's telling us that there is an enormous amount in this vast subject of Christian Science and divine metaphysics and the system of divine metaphysics that we've got to remember. There's no way that we can swallow this in one huge bite. But we must look at each major key point. That's the precept. Precept upon precept. And then we have to look at the fine detail of that main point. That's the line upon line. And she repeats them. Precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. And then she gives us the conclusion. Here a little, and there a little. So no matter what we're studying, we must pick up some tidbit of understanding we did not have previously. And then what happens? The magic of compounding. Now, there is no such thing as magic. So what do I mean? What do I mean is that compounding is an automatic element of mathematics. 1 + 1 = 2, but if you add another 1 to it, it's more than 3, because 1 + 1 + 1, or 1 + 1 = 2, and then 2 + 1 = 3, is a linear calculation. But what really happens? When we add 1 + 1, let's say you're talking about the first 3 introductory quotes. One could be the first quote, another one could be the second quote, and then you have 2. So what happens with the 3rd quote? You are building on a foundation that is double what it was before. So you already have some understanding of number 1 and number 2. In other words, the 1st and 2nd quote. And if you add them up, that's only 2 quotes. But when you think about the 1st quote, you're automatically working from a higher foundation than if you only looked at quote number 2. But if you're looking at quote number 1 and get some kind of an understanding about it, before you look at quote number 2, you're looking at quote number 2 with already a foundation that is going to let you go up more than just to the number 2. You are going to have a compounded one with a 1 added to it. And the same with everything that we study, no matter what the topic is. If we get a little bit here and a little bit there and don't do any backsliding, then we are going to be increasing immediately at the very beginning in a geometric fashion, not linear. So instead of having a straight line with a gentle curve up, we're going to have a line that has a upward curve and forward direction from the very onset. And that's what our goal is. Our goal is to just get one little bit of understanding from everything we study and add it to what we already learned. And we can go back and read that same quote a second time, and we will read it with more understanding than we did the first time. And that's what I mean by truth is multidimensional. Truth has no limit. Nothing about God has a limit. Let's review the very first definition that is considered comprehensive that she gives us, and that is in chapter 14. Chapter 14 is designed with 24 Q&A. And remember, that was originally called The Science of Man, and it was her first really substantial publication. he changed the title to Recapitulation. Because later she realized that God had dictated to her the conclusion of the first 13 chapters, which she had not received yet. She doesn't call herself an author. She calls herself a scribe under the orders of God. And in fact, she is so humble that she tells us to follow us only so far as she follows the Christ. Now, how does she define the Christ? We can explore that later, but basically she says it is the consciousness of God. And she defines the title of Christ for Jesus as a title, but not that Jesus is the Christ. God is the Christ, because it means the pure consciousness that is omnipresent. Jesus came to us in the form of a man, so he could not be omnipresent. Everything we want to learn about is information that is omnipresent, if we study the truth. It's not dependent upon a man. This is one reason we never want to worship an individual. Because if he's an advanced thinker, he's not getting it from his brain. He's getting it from understanding part of the knowing of God. And that's omnipresent, just like 7 plus 6 or 4 plus 12. Any combination of mathematical numbers that we want to add, subtract, multiply, or divide. That is truth, because it doesn't change. But it's also multidimensional, because there are several levels of mathematics. So we may be going from one level to another. Think about 3 plus 3. We could be thinking about a linear 3 plus a linear 3, or we could be thinking about 3 to the power of 3, and that's another level. She gives us 4 levels in the system of divine metaphysics, and they are explained on page 115 and 116 of the textbook. And basically, the first level she discovers, or reveals, rather, is immortal mind. And that's referring to, you guessed it, the All with a capital A. She defines 3 things: God, idea, and man. But they're all perfect, because they're all coming from immortal mind. And then she goes second to the lowest degree of mortality, mortal mind. What is the lowest level of a word you can think of? And it has to be a generic name. How about depravity? That's the term she uses. And that's the first degree of mortal mind. The second degree is a whole dimension above that, and it's considered the moral. If we're in depravity, we don't have a clue as to the difference between right and wrong. But when we elevate up to the next dimension, we know the difference between right and wrong. That's moral. And we let consciousness direct us to what is right and not accept what is wrong. And then the next level up, which is the third degree of mortal mind. So depravity is the lowest. That's called the first degree. The The moral is the second degree. And then the third degree is another huge dimension up, and that is called the spiritual. So we're edging closer and closer to immortal mind, which is God, idea, and man. These are all considered absolute numbers. Just like 1, 2, and 3 are absolute whole numbers versus a decimal, which is maybe 0.9 or 1.1. Those are not considered absolute numbers. They're relative. So those are the four levels. So when we read the same quote, like the one about truth, we could be talking about the absolute the first time, thinking ye shall know the truth. In fact, what that really means is ye shall know truth as an absolute, which is a name for God. And the truth, lower T, will make you free. In other words, when we can relate in our individual life to what is true about the truth with a capital T, then we will be free of the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter, which is what Jesus experienced when he ascended, when he told his disciples, don't touch me. Because if they looked upon him as a human, that was restricting their ability to see the divine nature, which is immortal mind. It's a lighthouse that is shining only the facts about God. And that's what Jesus was doing as he ascended. Mary Baker Eddy says we must excel in the human before we can touch divinity. And she refers, paraphrasing, that the magnitude of the humanity of Jesus enabled his divinity. That's what enables us to know the truth and be set free. And Shakespeare tells us how to do it. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Bicknell Young was such a wonderful Christian Science practitioner that they referred to him out in the field. He wasn't given his title by the church. A bureaucracy is a bureaucracy. Jesus didn't have a church. Mary Baker Eddy didn't want a church. She had one in the 1880s, and after, I think it was 2 or 3 years, she said, we got to get rid of this, because she could see what the problem was. It was mixing the material and the spiritual. And she wanted to keep Christian Science on a spiritual level. So when they met one day, she made the motion that they disband the church. Nobody wanted to challenge her, so they just agreed to it, not realizing what she was really doing. What she was really doing was trying to get the thought of everyone above a sense of materiality, which is a bureaucracy, which is a controlling function of humanity. Paul had a few churches, but he wasn't around much to be able to do anything with it because he was in prison. So he wrote letters to them, but he only considered them as being people that were interested in Christianity that were in a particular area. And that's how he named the churches. And that's how the books of the Bible were named. Letters to the Philippians, for example. So, Mary Baker Eddy was able to manage being without a church for another few years. I think it was, maybe 3 or 4 years. And then there was a strong pressure on her to start a church. Again, she then realized that the public was not advanced enough to realize what they were doing, and that they needed the support of their peers. So, realizing that they weren't ready to advance without support of other people and a material structure, including a bureaucracy, then she agreed to do it. But then after a few years, she realized that, wow, this is already out of hand. And so she did what she did not want to do, and she stated this publicly, and that was to write a manual of the rules governing the bureaucracy. But she was very intelligent about it, and she wrote those rules so that it was self-destruction, so that it did not govern anything except the local church once she passed on. And it had to be done in steps. So, for example, she had a board of directors of the church. She had a board of directors for the Publishing Society, which published all the books, all of her writings, and the weekly publication of the Sentinel and the weekly publication of the Journal, and later the daily publication of the Monitor. And so she made herself be an integral part that had to approve all of the important functions that had to do with governing all of the other churches. And she said she had to approve them. For example, the board of directors. She had to approve the new board of directors when one would pass on, or she wanted to replace them. And that was true with every primary function that was stated in the manual. And she took it out of the hands of the church and put it in a deed of trust, so that then moved to the judicial system, where they had to go through a court to get approval to do anything. And of course, the provision is that she had to approve it. And if she wasn't here to approve it, which means she had already passed on, they couldn't do it. And so the board of directors were self-expiring. And boy, they didn't like that at all. They understood exactly what she was doing. And they didn't like the fact that a woman was the one calling the shots, even though she was the founder, the discoverer, the leader. She was everything. They didn't like it. They fought her all the time. They tried to convince her to take those provisions out. She refused to do it. She said, God gave those to me, and I have no right to remove what God gave me. I don't have the authority to do it. So what did they do? The day she passed on, they said, aha! She is not here. We don't care what the documents say. We're going to go to court and tell them that she was crazy, and there's no way that she would have really meant that she wanted to take this huge organization with millions of people all around the world and disconnect all of the branches from us. We're the king. The branches are slaves. We want to keep them as slaves. And we're sure that she meant that, as any big corporation would. If they had branches all over the world, they would be reporting to the head office. But she specifically knew that was trouble, and that detracted from what Christian Science was all about, because Christian Science promoted individual thinking, individual development. Precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. In fact, a church wrote her one time and said, "We are so proud of what we have accomplished here. We hope you're pleased. Everything is going so smoothly, and we're just," they didn't say this, but I'm putting in the words, "we're like a fat cat, just living in great harmony, and things could never be better." What do you think she said in response when she wrote back? She never used a telephone. She didn't want the temptation for it to be a channel of feeding into her home mortal mind thoughts from others. So if they wanted to communicate with her, they had to make an appointment with her secretary, and she had to agree to it and tell him when she would meet with him. Then they'd have to travel to where she was. And she was not near Boston at all, because she had chosen Concord, New Hampshire. How about that for a word? Concord. Think of compounding. Wait till you learn about what compound Concord means. She named her most valuable prayers, 7 of them, that she gave to her most advanced class, Diapason. So here we are. She has been coerced or convinced that nobody was advanced enough to go without a church. And so they sprung up all over the world. And of course, she didn't start any of them, except probably the one in Concord, where she lived. And she obviously started a mother church in Boston. And she designed the plans of the first one and the replacement, which was a huge one that came along a few years later, probably about 10 years after she did the first one. It seated 5,000, and I think the first one seated 200 or 300. So what did they do the day she passed on? They hated her so much, fought her tooth and nail with everything she did, except when she designed the big church. They were happy because she was designing a huge one, and that's what they wanted, a huge one, a symbol to be controlling the world. What do you think individuals that write a book have at the beginning of the book? It's the custom. They do it today. Have a photograph of the individual to connect them to their work. So if somebody hates someone and they're in charge of publishing the works of someone they hate, what are they going to do? They're going to do everything possible to separate her from the works. And they're going to try to steal the work as their own. Not plagiarize a few parts of it, but the whole book. And that's what they did. They removed her picture from the book. And then they went around every place, and there were statues all over the area, all over New England states, several states, that were honoring Mary Baker Eddy. They found them all and destroyed them. Someone had even made a pyramid that was to the same scale as the Pyramid of Giza. And if you know anything about it, you understand what a significant factor that is, to Christianity. They blew it up. It was carved out of the largest piece of granite ever carved or mined in the state. And the state of New Hampshire was known as the Granite State. Because if anybody that wanted granite rock, they had to get it from Concord. So they blew it up. And not only that, but they had all of the pieces buried in multiple places that were all kept secret. So that there's no way anybody, even with slave labor, could have ever got all those pieces and put them together. Do you think that destroying a symbol is going to destroy the underlying truth? They did. They didn't have any choice. That was the only thing they could do. She had already been destroyed because they prayed with poison pen thoughts to try to kill her. They had been doing that for years. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy gave a message to one of her, who she thought was her trusted followers, and said, when I pass on, it's going to be because of me going. And she said, report that it was because of the attacks on me from the church, and that they really murdered me. They made it impossible for me to stay because they were going to put me in an insane asylum. They'd already tried to do that, you know, a couple of years before. I don't know how many years it was, but a few years before. And they sent psychiatrists, psychologists, you know, mind readers and all that kind of thing to try to prove that she was incapable of controlling her huge estate. It wasn't huge because she wanted to accumulate, because she kept giving it all away. She bought all the land for the church. I mean, she kept giving it away. All of the area around, the land for the publishing society, huge publishing facility. So, that's what they did. They did everything possible to separate her from her discovery. And it just couldn't be done. They put out warnings to the people. Tell them don't talk about her. Because you'll be deifying her. They had made a rule that people could only read and talk about books that they authorized. This was a committee called the Publication Committee. They were trying to be a cop, a policeman, of what everybody read around the world. And when she saw that published in the Christian Science Journal, because they didn't tell her about it, of course, and she saw it after it had already been printed and distributed around the world. So she dictated a letter that reversed what they said. And she said, I did not approve this. And I know that Christian Scientists are intelligent people and have the right to read anything they desire and follow any teachings they want to follow without it being dictated by a bureaucracy. So what did they do? They went around to all these reading rooms and had that taken out of, it was a like an addendum, a separate piece of paper that was supposed to be put inside each of the published journals. You know, they're bound volumes at the end of each year. And so she had it inserted in there, and they sent people around to take it out. That's what we're dealing with in evil. But we can't really talk about an individual. We can only talk about a class. For example, we should be talking only about the President of the United States and not about the man who is serving in that title. We should be praying for the President of the United States as a title and as a department, not as a individual personal man, not as a personality. She never wanted anybody to think of her as a personality. Well, in the early days, she did. She let them call her mother. They let them call her mother. She permitted to let people refer to her as mother. And then she realized that that was not right, so she stopped it. And they said, well, what are we going to do now? She says, look in my books. I'm in my books. She did not have preachers and pastors. She did in the beginning, and then she got rid of them because it was giving a deity symbol. So therefore, she put in the manual that everybody should elect readers for a term of 3 years. And there shall be a new election every 3 years. This is what the President of the United States has been trying to do with Congress, to limit their terms. But of course, they don't want to do it. So they always fail to pass what he recommended. So now he's going one step further and getting rid of the whole thing, the whole administration, Congress, the judicial, everything. Because they all want to control. They not only want to control their own purview, but they want to control everybody's. Everybody. Everybody wants to control everyone else. The intelligence agencies want to control absolutely the whole world. The whole world. And the galactic. All we have to do is follow Isaiah and listen to what Shakespeare tells us, the words of wisdom of Shakespeare. Now, what does it mean? Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It means our thoughts are the source of our experience. So do we want to be following the Christ consciousness, the consciousness of God, the immortal mind? Then we have to feed that into our thoughts. Feed that into what we hold as consciousness, as a reserve of all the best thoughts. And we have to filter out anything that doesn't qualify. Anything ungodlike. And we're really in trouble because Jesus said that what you think is the same as doing it. We all have a closet of things we would like not to talk about. If you do anything with your life, you're going to make mistakes. And so we put those in a closet. Try not to think about them. That's not the right way to do it. That's not the divine way to do it. That's a human way of trying to preserve your own ego. That doesn't solve anything. Here's the first definition of God. On page 465, the first of 24 questions and answers. What is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. What does she say in the glossary, which is chapter 17? The textbook is divided into two sections, two major sections. Science and Health is the first 14 chapters. 13 of them are the details, and 14 is recapitulation, which is the 24 questions and answers that summarize the key points of the first 13 chapters. And then chapter 15 through 18 are the key to the scriptures. 15 is on the book of Genesis. 16 is on the book of Revelation, or the Apocalypse, the last book in the Bible of the New Testament. So in other words, chapters 15 and 16 in the textbook are basically going from beginning to end of the Bible. The beginning of the Old Testament to the end of the New Testament. And every important point is covered in those two chapters of 15 and 16. 17 is a glossary. In other words, if you don't understand the words and the names of people that are in the Bible, then you're not going to understand some very important key points. So, she provides the definitions on the key characters and on the key thoughts, themes, topics. What do you think chapter 18 is? What should we always do at the end of anything that's been accomplished? And you can break that down to minor details as they are accomplished, which you should do. So what is it? Express gratitude. Express gratitude. And chapter 18 is 101 pages from 600 to 700 inclusive of 85 different individuals who have been verified and have provided the account of their healings, which averages just under 6 healings per individual. A total of 485 healings that came from 85 serious students. And these healings have all been published in the various publications of the Christian Science Sentinel and the Christian Science Journal between 1883, which was the very first issue of the Christian Science Journal. The Sentinel came along a few years later. I think it was 1890. And then up until her final edition of the textbook, which was in 1910. So any edition that is between 1875, the very first textbook, and 1910, the final edition, those are authorized versions. And she did not copyright the latest one. But of course, as soon as she passed on, what did the board of directors do? They convinced the court to let them copyright it. Violated the copyright rules. This recording is already 53 minutes long, so let's close this right here and call it part one, because that's more convenient for anyone that wants to listen to it in parts, because it could very well be twice as long by the time we're done, and it's easier to navigate if you're not looking at such long audios. So we will close it here, and then we will immediately continue on part two. So just as a reminder, the title is Zero God, Day or Death, Which One to Choose? And it presently is Monday, July 6, 2026. At 0719 in the morning. This will be the end of this right now, and thank you for listening. Please go to part two. The end.